This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Mr. Whitney?
Your Honor, we don't know who wrote this email. No one's here to testify to this. It is from Bianca Kowalski's email address. Ms. Kimball, who we discussed earlier, also testified to writing things like this. So we don't know who created this. It's hearsay without exception.
Let me ask you this. Was Ms. Kimball in Mexico during the medical coma?
I'm not aware.
So...
But they were in touch.
Well, it seems to me the whole purpose of hearsay is to keep things out when there's not a belief that it's reliable. This has very specific information, which presumably, had we had the records from Mexico, we would have been able to verify specifically this is what happened on the blood work and all of that. So it's her email account. I'm assuming that's her email account. And so it does seem to me to be a statement she wrote to herself. And so to me, this is a very low chance that it's not Bianca Kowalski writing this.
And so what's the hearsay exception? Because it's not a statement for purposes of medical treatment.
Your Honor, it's clearly... detailing state of mind is purposes of medical diagnosis. It is admissions against interest. She is writing as if she is Maya, and she's writing all sorts of complications related to the coma. That procedure that Maya went under, and that is an admission that contradicts the testimony that's been presented with regard to the coma procedure that Maya underwent. And the procedure is very high risk due to the fact that I have immunodeficiency, poor nutrition status. I mean, it's an admission.
I don't believe statements of the decedent are admissible under party admission.
But we have a clear case law on that.
Okay, well, let me back this out. Did anyone say record recollection? I think that one has to be offered.
No, we did not say recorded recollection, Judge. At least I don't think so. I've had whispering in my ears, but I don't think we said recorded recollection. But this is an admission, it's detailing all the complications that occurred and the concerns so state of mind for sure, and it also shows all the complications, admission of that versus the somewhat rosy picture that's been portrayed to the jury of this coma that Maya underwent.
Certainly not for purposes of medical treatment. It's Beata's not writing to the doctor. And statements of a decedent under the case law we reviewed are not admissible as party admissions.
I don't know what he's referring to there, Judge. That doesn't make sense to me. She's clearly a party.
Statement being offered against the party.
Yes.
That's the party's own statement.
Yes.
It would seem that there is an exception to the hearsay that would apply. Anything else, Mr. Whitney?
Under Huff versus White Motor Corp at 609 Federal 2nd 286, and admittedly this is a rare situation, but I'm in Earhart's. Statement of decedent is not admissible against the estate as a statement of a party opponent.
We're not admitting this against the estate judge. We're admitting this against her.
Well, what was your site? It sounded like a federal case.
It is, Your Honor.
It's other 609?
609, Federal 2nd, 286.
Because it uses the double negative, but it looks like the statement was admitted. We hold that unless the declarant was not mentally competent when he made the statement, it should have been admitted under the so-called residual exception to the hearsay rule.
I don't believe Florida has the residual exception to the hearsay rule. So I don't think that piece is applicable.
What?
I don't see how this case is.
Well, I'm not even sure it. Okay, the decedent in that case was Jesse Huff. It says decedent was Jesse Huff. The PR was Helen Huff, the wife. The declarant, defendant offered in trial court, excluded the testimony of Melvin Miles. So the declarant, who was the husband of Mrs. Huff's husband and a friend. Huff gave the following description of how the accident occurred. So this is a person who heard the decedent say how the accident occurred. Apparently, Indiana doesn't accept privity. So, even if that were the case, you would still run into the problem under Florida law 18D, which is a statement by the party's agent or servant concerning a matter. Mom is perhaps the agent. So I don't see how that case applies at all.
Is the court saying that Biata here is the agent of Maya? Is that what's being said?
Well, I mean, the reality is we have...
Well, I have the case
I'm sorry?
I found the case in all fours in Florida covering the same issue.
Well, give me a Florida case that's better than a Seventh Circuit federal case.
It's a Second District case, 185 Southern 2nd, 7.
Ritter versus Bringle, B-R-E-N-G-L-E?
Yes, and about two-thirds of the way down, it says, admissions against interest made by a person since deceased may be introduced against a person claiming under in succession to the deceased declarant. And then it cites a Florida Supreme Court decision from 1951.
Can you give us the cite again?
Yes, sir. It's
185 Ritter. Southern 2nd 7.
Thank you.
Okay, so I conclude that there is an exception to the hearsay rule that would apply for exhibit...
3144. Understanding, I want to put one more thing on the record, which is that we'd object on relevance and 403 because this email is not relevant to our medical malpractice claim. There's no claim back against Fabre against Dr. Cantu. The hospital had no knowledge of this when they did what they did. So it's not relevant to anything that happened inside that hospital for 3.5 months.
Your Honor, they've put central to this case the idea that the hospital had no basis to conclude that there was medical child abuse, that there's no basis for the transfer orders questioning this treatment. It's absolutely false that the hospital did not know about this, because part of what the hospital had and saw in its records were specifically treatments of this. Mrs. Polsky was in the ER demanding that, you know, Maya be put into a ketamine coma. The plaintiffs have set up in front of this jury arguments that, yeah, it wasn't really that high risk, it wasn't that big of a deal. This details, frankly, without using hyperbole, the horror of what went on with Maya in this coma. So it's highly relevant to issues that the plaintiff has introduced.
Well, let's go back to the 30,000 foot view. There's evidence before this jury that there was a 50-50 chance of death that was told to the family, including Maya. We have Dr. Cantu said, well, you know, we say that, but you know, he doesn't believe that to be an accurate. This tells us what happened in
or could be seen by the jury as what happened during day one of the medical coma. There was evidence that was presented to the jury about the coma. There was videos. There was discussion about some lab work. I think there was some discussion that there was some difficulty during the procedure.
Yes, so, recognizing all of that, Your Honor, the only thing that the hospital had knowledge of at the time is what was in their records. And that was a couple of lab results from Dr. Cantu. In order for this to be relevant, there would have to be either a Fabre claim against Dr. Cantu, of which there's no basis for that. They don't have an expert to even opine on causation in that regard. And nothing that the hospital did can be explained by what's contained in this email, because they did not know of it until 3 years into this litigation. So what they did in the fall of 2016 is unrelated to an email that's produced to them in 2019-2020.
What are we doing about Fabre? Because Mr. Altenburn suggested that there was going to be no Fabre or potentially no Fabre request.
That's likely the way this is going, but that's not what we're introducing this for.
Okay, help me understand what you're introducing this for. Okay.
Again, Your Honor, they have represented to this jury that all of the medical treatment that the Kowalski saw was completely normal standard of care, and the people at All Children's are not RSD specialists, and they did not understand that what was being requested here was just everyday thing. And of course there was, now I had to push for the 50-50 admission because people were downplaying it. What this shows as a play-by-play, because the records we requested from Dr. Cantu were either destroyed or lost or whatever, it shows a couple things. It shows the horror that went on to Maya Kowalski while she was in this coma. It shows that our experts are correct, that this is completely unnecessary and dangerous risk, which just goes directly to the heart of our defense team. It also shows Yana Kowalski writing as if she's Maya, and the plaintiffs have made a big deal about, you know, the lack of basis of any Munchausen by proxy diagnoses. This is in the file of Sally Smith as part of her WordPress blogs. It's also, I believe, referenced in Dr. Lewis's report. This goes right to the heart of everything that we're defending against, as the plaintiffs are putting on a case of, we were just seeking conventional treatments that you just weren't used to, and the ketamine coma was no big deal. We can't defend our case if we can't show exactly what Viotto was writing in real time. It's an admission by a party to the point that's relevant, and this has to come in order for us to defend ourselves.
Well, let's walk through the counts. Doesn't go to false imprisonment, right?
It does not go to false imprisonment.
Doesn't go to battery.
Well, you know, it can go to, well, anyway. It would only go to false imprisonment to the extent that it corroborates what our doctors were trying to tell Beata and Jack Kowalski with, look, we'd like to talk to you about staying here because the treatments that you want, and there's no question in the record that they were coming into the ER saying, we want to put Maya in a ketamine coma. And our doctors, as they testified, the nurses were shocked by this. And this corroborates what our doctors and our nurses were saying, which was, this treatment that you're asking for is insane, so let's sit down, let's talk, let's have a real conversation, let's have you agree to the treatment plan. So this email corroborates exactly why our doctors had this thought. So it can go to that.
Not sure I agree with the stretch there, but okay. Doesn't go to battery.
Does not go to battery.
I know the DV is under advisement relative to Maya for negligent infliction of emotional distress, but doesn't seem to go there, right? How about medical malpractice?
Yes, it definitely goes to medical malpractice.
Okay, well, let me ask this, because medical malpractice focuses on the acts or omissions that occurred at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
And whether we were right, and whether we were, because their whole claim their whole basis, which we think obviously we disagree with, but their whole claim is you stopped the standard of care treatment that Maya Kowalski needed, and as a result of this, now Maya Kowalski somehow, because you wouldn't give her the proper treatment, Maya Kowalski somehow is somehow worse off with relapses and remissions going into the future in the $20, $30, $50, $80 million care plan. Our point is, and as we've said over and over again, the treatment for CRPS is physical therapy, occupational therapy, cognitive therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and time. It, you don't do ketamine drips and ketamine infusions at 23 milligrams per kilogram per hour. You don't go for ketamine pills. You don't go for intrathecal pain pumps, which is what they're saying that we prevented them from doing. And this email is the best evidence, and frankly, the only evidence that we have to show exactly why we are the standard of care, and this is risky and dangerous. It comes from Yana's own words.
But.
And we didn't aggravate. They're going to argue in the jury instructions that we aggravated her CRPS by not giving her this.
But it's true the Johns Hopkins Ultra Women's Hospital did not have access to this email, I'm presuming what's going to follow.
Not true. We had access to it because it was part of Sally Smith's file. Indeed, the WordPress blogs are part of her file.
Well, so now we're adopting Sally Smith as our agent for purposes of treatment and standard of care opinions at the hospital, if we're going there.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Finish.
None of our experts have testified, none of our standard of care experts testified that the breach of the standard of care was failure to give a ketamine coma. What Beata Kowalski, you heard this from Dr. Bauer, what she came in asking for was 1,500 milligrams of ketamine, like Dr. Hanna was giving the United States. This reference to 23 milligrams per kilogram per hour is not a reference to this. It's a reference to Dr. Hanna's treatment 2 days before her admission.
Why don't I see, because I'm assuming what I do on day one is going to be what I do on the balance. So let me look at the next few, and then I'll probably take it under advisement and let you know on Monday. But 3145, please.
Same issue, Your Honor.
Okay, let me just read it real quick. Anything that we haven't already said with respect to day one, with this day two email?
Well, again, you know, I also want to point out that Beata Kowalski is writing as if she's Maya, and they have squarely put in front of this jury that we would never agree to these transfer codes because one of the diagnoses is on there, and Dr. Neuberger was read into the record saying that diagnosis was medical malpractice. They're going to argue this. This goes directly to the suspicion of Munchausen by proxy as a mother writing as her daughter. So it also goes to that in addition to the prior statements that we used to.
Your Honor, it cannot go to a suspicion of Munchausen by proxy in 2016, October 7th through the 20th of 2016, when it was not in their possession. It wasn't known to them. What she wrote with respect to thank you, God, and appreciate it, Jesus, has nothing to do with a Munchausen by proxy inside that hospital in 2016 because they didn't have it.
We did have it.
But beyond that.
Well, you didn't have it for the false imprisonment time period at issue.
But we had it during the time that we were trying to transfer the child.
And diagnose
it. And before October 17th?
They would need some evidence in the record of this.
When the transfer attempts were trying to go to Nemours in November, and the plaintiffs keep saying,
Time out. You said it goes to false imprisonment. The only you got the picture taking and you got the EEG.
So the only time the false imprisonment is that first week. So that's the point I think Mr. Whitney was making, that it wasn't available for false imprisonment. It might go to your med mal,
yes.
But that's probably the only place that arguably it might go to. So mm-hmm. All I want to do at this point is let me see the rest of them.
All right.
If there's anything unique about the next series, let me know, but let's not have a continued re-argument because I'm not going to rule today.
Yes, sir. Right.
So let me see the day three, which is 3146. Let's go to the next one, which is 3147. Is 3148 the last one in this series?
I believe so.
And it looks like that's two pages?
Yes.
Can you just put up both pages or look, I might make it too small. Let's see. Yeah, just go back to just the one page, please.
This one you're done with.
What's the other basis?
It goes to show that my clients were correct about the reasons why ketamine is not an effective drug. It's showing, this specific one is showing that Maya is not recovering from these ketamine doses. And we would just submit to Your Honor, just because we believe we did, can show that my clients, for some of them, had knowledge of this. But even if we didn't, this would be no different than our doctors. Take a simple case. Someone comes into the emergency room and says, I have a broken arm, and we read the x-ray report as negative, and they go home and then they sue us for failing to diagnose the broken arm. Couldn't we say there's an x-ray from 2 days before the admission that is also negative, it doesn't show a broken arm, and sure, we didn't know about that, but it corroborates. Their diagnosis is the same as our diagnosis. All of this goes to corroborate exactly why, in defense of a medical malpractice claim, my clients were correct. They were correct to be suspicious of ketamine. They were correct to be scared of having Maya undergo these treatments. And it completely contradicts the narrative that the plaintiffs have put forward.
I'm sorry, what was the end?
Sorry, it completely contradicts the narrative the plaintiffs have put in front of the jury, and it's especially important because, again, the plaintiffs are saying that we aggravated a condition by not providing this treatment.
Anything else, Mr. Whitney?
Their experts are free to come in and testify about standard of care. They don't need this to do so. This, again, was not in their possession, and I'm not sure how it helps them because the photographic and video evidence is that Maya Kowalski and their records, that Maya Kowalski did progressively better and better following this codeine coma. We would also challenge the idea that they had possession of this information at any time during the relevant 3.5 month admission, unless they're adopting Sally Smith as their agent.
I'm going to take 3144, 3145, 3146, 3147, and 3148 under advisement. What's next?
Do you want any additional information from us, Judge, or are you just going to rule?
No, let me ask this, and this is bleeding over into a different concept, but since we somewhat referenced it earlier, and it goes to Fabre. Because ultimately, if the defense doesn't seek Fabre, then that there's not an issue. But again, the medical malpractice goes to the acts or omissions at the hospital. So following up what Mr. Shapiro was just talking about, let's say you have a car crash, and maybe there's somebody that's negligent in that. It might be helpful to know, hey, there was a crash and what generally happened. But when a person that was a victim of negligence in the car crash goes to the hospital for care and then the hospital malpractices, you don't really go back and apportion the first crash. And so it would seem like, from an evidentiary standpoint, it might be helpful to know what happened, but then you don't try to figure out, well, driver one was 18% at fault while driver two was 83% at fault, because that wouldn't really matter for the malpractice case.
I understand what the court's saying, that typically who caused the car crash doesn't come into whether or not the doctor's malpractice. Is that your point, when you got into the ER? Yeah, but again, given this is a very unusual case, and given this scenario that the jury's presented, this type of evidence specifically goes to rebut their position that our failure to give her ketamine, which is their position, that we stopped the ketamine protocol, aggravated her CRPS to the tune of a permanent aggravation.
But let's be specific. Ketamine in the amount that was given in Mexico is different than a lesser dose. And this jury's already been told multiple times that the dosage of ketamine in the amount that occurred in Mexico is not available in the United States. So,
because this, let me give you an example. Mr. Tremp took the witness stand. This is also why this is relevant. Mr. Tremp took the witness stand, and it was memorable. I'm sure you remember because we got into it. She was a freight train heading to college. This ketamine was all working, and because you didn't give her the ketamine, she's now a wreck and can never do X, Y, and Z. These records go exactly to my cross-examination of Mr. Tremp, and the jury needs to see them because the only picture they've gotten from the plaintiff is, and especially with their expert relying on it, from everything I've seen, Maya Kowalski was happy, healthy, and thriving with ketamine. These words from Beata, a firsthand witness, exactly what's happening to Maya during ketamine coma, is essential for the defense to be able to rebut the information that Mr. Tremp is showing, that this freight train heading to college was actually near death on a table in Mexico because of the treatments that they put her through then, and they continue to advocate in even higher doses at Dr. Hanna's office. And that's exactly the point. I mean, he was given 3 to 7 milligrams per kilogram per hour in an intubated session. Dr. Hanna was giving 23 milligrams per kilogram per hour, and we need these records to be able to say that this is what ketamine does to somebody, not this rosy picture of what the plaintiffs are showing. You get a couple doses of ketamine, and then you're swimming in the pool. And they're asking for over $5 million in ketamine as a reasonable, as a necessary treatment, and we need these to be able to tell the jury, no, this is what ketamine does to a child. So it goes to damages, it goes to medical malpractice, it goes to aggravation, it goes to state of mind, it goes to a number of relevant issues.
And I said, I will take it under advisement. I continue to struggle. I feel like we're almost on a collateral issue.
I understand where Your Honor says. To us, it's the heart of the case. That's all I can tell you.
Just on this point about this being relevant to Mr. Tremp's testimony, specifically the $5 million in ketamine that Mr. Shapiro just referenced is not for recurrent ketamine comas. It was for the infusion treatments at Dr. Kirkpatrick's office, the same type of treatments she was receiving in the United States immediately before the hospitalization. So what's relevant is the demand or request of Viata and Jack to have a similar dose that Dr. Hanna was giving. Nothing about a ketamine coma and what transpired there. And again, there's no Fabry claim against Dr. Cantu.
Let's move on. What's next?
3149. There's actually 12 of them. It's her advising Dr. Kirkpatrick of...
Isn't this similar to the one that we just ruled on?
Yes.
Yes.
I think we're...
The terminally ill stuff, you've...
No, I don't think this... Okay. I thought it was... Oh, yes.
We're going to revisit that.
Let's revisit.
On proffer.
Yeah. 3150. Oh, we must have skipped one, Judge. This is coma day 6. Somehow it got...
Let me just see it.
Yeah.
Let's not have any argument on it.
Right.
It'll be taken under advisement.
Yeah. Yes, I just think we... Yes, this belongs to that same grouping, Judge.
3151, Clay.
Thank you.
No, I think that's day 6, so that's...
Yeah.
Is this still 3150?
Yeah, there's a few of these that are in order. 3151, 3152, 3153. There's several more, Your Honor, not to interrupt you, but if we're going to group them all together, we can show you the next ones in the series.
Let me. I have finished 3150. Show me the next one.
3151.
I mean, this one doesn't seem to discuss anything about medical. So, 3153 will be out.
3154.
This looks like the same email.
Oh, I apologize. Is it 3155?
So 3154 is out as well.
Sorry, I think 3153 was the one that I misstated. Will you go back to 3153? Oh, sorry, 3153 and 3154 are the same.
Yeah.
Okay, so 3153 and 3154.
Okay, so the transcript's clear. 3153 and 3154 are not admitted.
3155 relate to the ketamine boosters.
Do you want hard copies of these?
Yes, please.
Yes?
Yeah, if I can take them home tonight.
Okay.
Okay, just query, how is it possible if Beata Kowalski's in the United States and this is happening in Mexico, how is... Is possible.
I'm sorry to follow you.
Well, assuming that this is Biot, and I think that's what we were working on, I flew to Monterey Saturday the 19th, and on Sunday the 20th, I got admitted. And it's talking about specifics.
I think that goes to our concern over the reliability of all of these emails, Your Honor.
Well, I think she emailed from Mexico, isn't it?
Well, it says mommy couldn't switch her clients and couldn't get the time off from work. So daddy had to fill in mommy's shoes.
But it's still, there's still statements by the decedent which are chargeable against the party. It's still mom's recollection and statements of what went on with these combs and these boosters, which again...
How can mom make a statement if she's not there? I mean, just practically, how is that possible?
The other reason we would admit him again is I think it goes to the state of mind and the potential Munchausen's diagnosis that they criticized with mom logging as if she's a minor.
What's the next one?
Which one was this, Clay? 3156.
Well, again, I mean, this refers to mommy being in the United States while all this stuff's happening in Mexico.
Yep. I'll just be heard on this one last time, Mark. Again.
If it's duplicative of what you've already said, then no. If it's something new, then okay. Is it anything new?
I think I've already made the point about the Munchausen diagnosis.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, for the sake of expedience, Your Honor. There's about 30 of these. Do you want them all printed out and given to you rather than going through them one by one? It's up to you.
Yeah, that's probably better.
I just don't want to keep you here later than you want to be.
And many of those that are to come, Judge, are not in Mexico. They are stateside, and the monthly updates that provide the foundation and baseline leading up to the 2016 initiative issue.
And so you'll be able to print those out in a few minutes here?
Yep.
Okay, so let's go on to the next one that is not in this series.
Yeah,
that
I'm trying to figure that out, Judge.
Just Clay, will you print them all the way through 3181?
I'm just looking at your list here. It looks like 3172 might be different type of thing.
We'll pull it open.
I'm just saying we might want to address it now.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I know you're printing. Can you also pull up 3172?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Or Mr. Reyes could also probably pull up exhibits.
We have it up there.
All right.
We'll withdraw that, Judge.
We want it. We'll take it. Admit.
Withdrawn.
So 3172 has been withdrawn by the
That's correct, Your Honor.
Defendant. What's next?
This one's
I think 3175 is also perhaps not part of the series.
Can you call 3175?
Oh, I'm sorry. It says on your sheet here between Biot and Dr. Cantu.
Well, maybe try 3176 because that also has.
Okay. This looks like an email with Dr. Cantu. Oh, yeah. This one is okay. Is that in? I think this has already been shown.
We had a discussion about it with the judge.
Madam Clerk, is 3176 in evidence? Clerk says it's not.
Well, is it, there might be a corresponding 10,000.
Let's get it in one way. Sure.
Yeah. I recall this being discussed. Maybe I just looked at it when Dr. Cantu was testifying.
Your Honor, it's good to be noted that everywhere else in the world orders their days and months differently in the United States.
So yeah. I agree with Ms. Croyles. I think we've had a conversation.
I think it says 2415, Your Honor.
2415?
It is. Okay.
Can you just pull up 2415 on one side and 3176 on the other side?
Yeah, it looks the same.
Okay, so 2415, let's just make sure that's in. Clerk is saying yes, so we don't need 3176. There we go. So we don't need to do anything with 3176 because it's already in at 2415.
Take the victory. Okay. Just trying to look at the descriptions here, Judge, to see. Is he this clear for you, Mr.?
Yes.
Okay. I think that, like, the 3185, I think we've looked at these already, and I'm not sure. I have to go back and look, Judge, if we've already visited these in the court of rule or not. I don't want to repeat myself.
Yeah.
Okay, what about 3191? Can we see that one, please?
No, I don't want to get into this.
No, we
we'll
don't
take
want to
it.
This. No, we'll withdraw this.
Take that bond paragraph in isolation.
So, what one was just withdrawn?
Yeah. Well, Judge, I think we need to look at. I'm sorry.
What number was just withdrawn?
3191, Your Honor.
What's next?
Oh, 3240.
Daisy Award?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's already been talked about. Okay. Put up 3240.
Mm-hmm.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
3240 is in. Is received, I should say. What's next?
Judge, I think that's all we can address without.
We're going to go back through these, and if there's any more, we'll let you know, but I think that's going to be almost everything we're going to try.
Well, we're going to have Kathy B. emails, but I have to go through them.
Well, let me just, my understanding and was this was supposed to be a relatively comprehensive list. So, next week we're not going to expect lots of new exhibits that are not on this.
Well, I think, Judge, the Kathy Beatty email are 800 pages, and I need to go through that. Not the one that's listed here. That's a different one.
which we could look at that one. But then there's literally 800 of them. I need to go through this weekend and distill which of those I'm going, based on the court's rulings to date, which ones I'm going to try to get in. So there will be some. She's not testifying Monday or Tuesday. So we can deal with that. But the court's indulgence on that. I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, because the rest were WordPress blogs, but I think that WordPress blogs are verified by the underlying emails that you're taking under advisement. If your honor is concerned about the WordPress blogs were authenticity, so if you're going to let in the underlying emails, that's going to answer our question, or vice versa. So.
And just so you're aware, too, Your Honor, the WordPress blog is effectively stops in December of 2015, so a lot of the emails, the tranche you're getting into 2016 would not be in the blog itself.
I just want to, because we've got time, if there's other exhibits, you know, I don't want to miss an opportunity and make us stay late another day.
Well, let me look. Well, I don't believe there's any others that we need to address
in the court.
Can you just give us a minute, Judge?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Back to flying a fighter jet. How about that?
We have some photos we could look up, Judge.
Okay, thank you. What number?
3225.
Are these on the list you sent?
Yeah. No, they're not. Oh. I'm sorry. We're back. I think that one's in.
No objection.
I don't remember seeing this one.
No objection.
Now, all of the metadata that's under there, is that?
Well, we can get that removed, Judge. But we need the date, though.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just...
Okay.
We might have to object to the username of Raspberry Shopkins. I don't know if she still uses that.
Well, can we?
And she has quite an Instagram followership these days, but I'm not sure it's Raspberry Shopkins.
Okay.
Well, and let's. I try not to put email addresses and telephone numbers.
Go ahead and take it down, Clint.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to announce.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know what? Before we start flashing stuff on the screen, we'll go through them. We have other things we can discuss rather than.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I didn't realize we were publicly putting that up. Sorry. Yeah, 3168, Judge.
3168.
This is in March of 2016. The auto writing to the church requesting this information be put in a flyer for a fundraiser. Seeking money for more ketamine booster infusions.
Okay. Well, we object, Your Honor. I think the redactions there are prejudicial, and the idea that she's doing this for financial gain is what the defense wants to get at. So there's no way to do this. Well, part of the Munchausen diagnosis or theory is that a parent's doing this for ulterior motive. So they want to argue that Beata Kowalski is putting her daughter through all of this because she can make a few $1,000s. The redactions under that last paragraph says begins currently. You can see two redactions, which would be insurance companies. And so Yeah, it's expensive, but the reason she's seeking money is because insurance doesn't cover the treatments. So I don't know how you can extract that and then make an accusation against the mother that she's doing this all for financial gain.
I just had a clarification. Are the plaintiffs alleging in this case that he misdiagnosed Munchausen or no?
Well, let me ask you this. Is the hospital contending that mom had Munchausen?
Well, the diagnosis code that we have to defend says one of the reasons for transfer, it's in the diagnosis. So it's one of the diagnoses. Are the plaintiffs alleging that that's a misdiagnosis?
Because I've been unclear as to whether the defense agrees that Maya, whether she does or does not have CRPS.
The defense of this case from a medical malpractice standpoint is that whether this was psychological, RSD, conversion disorder, Munchausen's by proxy, the treatment would be the same, physical therapy, cognitive therapy, occupational therapy. What I'm asking the plaintiff is the plaintiff alleging that the Munchausen diagnosis was wrong, that we committed medical malpractice by having that appear in our record, that we committed medical malpractice by having that on the transfer code, that because of that allegation that pushed Beata to some type of intentional infliction of emotional distress, if they are, then we absolutely need not just these that I'm going to hand to court, but these things of fundraising because it does go to that diagnosis. So the answer to Your Honor's question is we don't plan on making this case about whether she had, you know, which disorder they had, but we definitely, if the plaintiff is going to allege, which I think they have, clearly, that the diagnosis of Munchausen inflicted distress, stopped transfers to the Moors, was a medical malpractice diagnosis, then this would go to our defense to say that that diagnosis was one of the working diagnoses on the district.
Yeah, I'm unclear.
Okay.
Because I go back to opening statement, and Mr. Hunter made a statement to the jury to the effect of, we did not have to be right, we only had to be reasonable.
Correct.
Which I thought was an interesting statement at the time. But I'm unclear now by what you're saying whether the hospital agrees that Maya Kowalski has CRPS. Because, I mean, I just heard a whole bunch of depositions today that seems to suggest that the hospital is saying she doesn't have CRPS.
The hospital's position on this, and from the defense's point, is very clear. The diagnosis of CRPS is questionable. Whether she has it or not is subject to debate because there's no test to rule it in. There's no test to rule it out. It's a syndrome. It's not like you can take a blood test and say that, you know, you have CRPS the way you could say you have leukemia. But from the all children's point of view, whether she had CRPS, whether she had psychosomatic pain, conversion disorder, or whatever the new language was that you heard from the doctor, the medical treatment for this is the same, cognitive behavioral therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, all of which we provided, and all of which, to the extent we could not provide, we were trying to transfer to other institutions that had a higher level of care for this. Yeah, I think that you can see in the discharge, if it's on the admission diagnosis, we provided treatment for her if she would have had it. It's also on the discharge. CRPS is on the discharge diagnosis as a can't rule out. So the hospital's position on this, I don't think is, should not be unclear to this court or to this jury. We are not taking the position that Maya never had CRPS. It was a diagnosis that we considered, we respected, we provided treatment for, just the same as if she had a psychosomatic disorder. And on the discharge diagnosis, it says it couldn't be ruled out. So if that answers the court's specific question about what our position is on CRPS. There's just not a blood test for this that we can say yes, she had it, or no, she had it.
I heard what you're saying. I'm not sure I think it's a clear answer, but I hear and I appreciate the line you seem to be trying to walk, but I'm not sure I totally understand it being a clear answer.
I'll try to give it to you in 10 seconds. To the pain management team, it didn't matter. The treatment for Dr. Elliott has testified to this. Our pain management team testified to it. I think the ICU doctors I thought, testified to it, but our pain management people will testify to this. The treatment for RSD / CRPS is exactly the same treatment as cognitive behavior, as conversion disorder or any psychosomatic, or I think it was called central processing, central sensitization disease. It's cognitive, physical, occupational therapy. And to the all children's team, it didn't matter whether she had CRPS or not.
Well, then my question back is, does it matter whether mom had Munchausen? Because one, Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital is taking the position that it's in a children's hospital, it's not an adult hospital, it did not seek to provide any care and treatment. There's certainly evidence that's been adduced that this is a diagnosis that would impact Viata. It, frankly, I'm struggling to see how it goes to the what type of care for CRPS that the hospital did or did not provide to Maya, and it's the focus is on Maya for medical malpractice. So that, you know, I'm struggling with why we're spending so much time on it when it doesn't seem to be an actual issue in the case.
Only because the plaintiff has injected this into the case, saying that your diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy or as a reason for the transfer is the reason we couldn't accept the transfer, and it was a negligent diagnosis. Your diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy caused
correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the basis of medical malpractice is the diagnosis that precluded a transfer. Is that, am I misunderstanding the case?
That specific question, whether the listing of Munchausen by proxy on a transfer diagnosis is not the basis for a malpractice claim, that was first an issue raised in this case by the defense when they attempted to claim that effectively Jack and Viata had been unreasonable for not accepting that psychiatric diagnosis in that transfer, and it was on them for not accepting the transfer to Nemours. Then we get testimony that Nemours doesn't in fact have a CRPS inpatient program, and Ms. Beattie lied on the phone to Beata Kowalski, and it was a psychiatric diagnosis they were trying to transfer her for.
Let me stop you because I need to understand. Is the plaintiff saying that there was negligence on the part of the hospital having to do with having them that diagnosis, the conversion / Munchausen, as a medical negligence on failure to transfer?
I just want to rephrase the question to make sure I'm understanding. Is our position that it was a breach of the standard of care to use Munchausen in the transfer diagnosis? Am I understanding that correctly?
Are you claiming any sort of damages? Let's do it this way.
Sure.
Any sort of damages associated with a non-transfer that occurred on whatever date that was or that time period?
When was the Nemours transfer?
There were two attempts. Right?
It was in November, and I would only, if I may, Your Honor, I would even broaden that to ask the plaintiff, are they seeking any damages from this defense for the diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy? If they're not, that may simplify what Your Honor's concern is.
Well, I'm going to try to answer the court's question first. I don't believe we're allowed to seek damages from the transfer attempt in the context of a Chapter 39 proceeding. I think that was a defense theory raised to muddy up the false imprisonment claim, and now I'm hearing that this transfer diagnosis or transfer attempt wasn't even made until the middle of the dependency proceeding when Chapter 39 shelter order was in place. So, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
With respect to Munchausen by proxy, I think the court a second ago spotted the issue, which is that's a diagnosis of the mom. So they take a position that's duplicitous. That is in their records, Munchausen by proxy, there's no question. But then they retreat and say, well, we're a pediatric hospital, we can't treat or diagnose adults. But yet their records of Maya Kowalski are littered with an adult diagnosis. We have been asking the question for years, and this is what you're hearing. We can't even get a frank admission as to whether or not CRPS was or was not a diagnosis of the hospital they were treating. We've tried innumerable times. They won't commit to what their diagnosis was. And then to take the position that the treatments for all of these conditions are identical, well, that's preposterous. But secondly, if that's true, our breach of standard of care, Dr. Duncan testified to this. If you're taking the position that all of these conditions, no matter what they are, require cognitive behavioral therapy, and you provide 3 hours of cognitive behavioral therapy over the course of a 3.5 month admission, we can go with that for the moment, and it's a breach of the standard of care no matter what diagnosis they ultimately land on, but they won't land on one.
Well, with respect to the first attempt transfer, the one in October that occurred during the period of time for the claim of false imprisonment, it seems to me whether mom had Munchausen or not is not the issue. Because the evidence, the issue is mom didn't want to sign the form because of that diagnosis. So even if the plaintiffs, or sorry, even if the defense said, well, mom had Munchausen, that doesn't change the fact that mom wasn't going to sign the form. And so that doesn't go to the question of false imprisonment.
Right. The form was
How does it go to Maya's medical malpractice claim or any claim that's actually remaining in this case?
Okay. To correct, that transfer attempt was in November, but I would just reiterate this.
The first one was October.
The first one was October, but the form was for a November transfer.
Okay.
But all that being said, I think I see exactly what the court's question is, so I would ask it again. Are the plaintiffs seeking damages from my client for any of the counts for what they're alleging is a miss or a false diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy? If they're not, if we have a stipulation from the plaintiff, we're not seeking damages from you for the diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy, then I don't have to put on a case about why that diagnosis was correct. So I turn to the plaintiff and ask him that again.
What I want is I want the defense team to huddle, inclusive of Mr. Hunter, and the plaintiff's team to huddle, inclusive of Mr. Anderson. I want you all to talk about this issue. It's both what Mr. Shapiro was just saying, but I also think it goes to the question of whether the hospital is going to contend or not that Maya has CRPS. Because, I mean, I hear what you're trying to say, but sitting here, it doesn't seem to come across pretty clear as far as the evidence that you're presenting. If we get to the point where there's an agreement as to the plaintiffs are not seeking damages, and I'm not saying that they have a valid claim, but for this exercise, if they're not going to seek it, and you agree that they're not, since they're not seeking it, we don't have to deal with it. Seems like a lot of this issue goes away.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
So.
Okay, we'll huddle.
You need to huddle, and I really want to know on Monday the outcome of it. I also want to know if the hospital has a more clear statement as to whether Maya Kowalski has CRPS.
Okay, I thought I announced it, but I'll try to
synthesize it. It might be that you're just going to go with what you went with, and that is what it is.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
But let's go back and sharpen our pencils and look at the actual claims that are in this case. And knowing that I've knocked out a whole bunch of claims, both before trial and during this trial.
It goes to the same issue. The remaining documents we have are similar fundraising and things that may not be relevant if the plaintiff is not seeking damages for alleged Munchausen, we probably don't need a lot of these.
So this is probably, even though we're not exactly at 6 o'clock, probably a good time to just say...
I think it is.
Yes. I actually think this discussion in the last 10 minutes has been helpful. Now, my hope is that the lawyers that are here can go talk to the lawyers that are not here and see if we can come to some sort of agreement.
Yes, we appreciate the court's guidance, Your Honor.
What time on Monday?
Your Honor, may I approach? I have the compendium.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
What time on Monday do we need to be here, knowing that the jury's going to... I already
go
at 9.
Yeah, all of our witnesses on Monday, Your Honor, and I think we've announced them to the plaintiff.
I don't know if we have enough.
Have they told you, Mr. Whitney? Well, I apologize. On Monday, we're going to have Dr. Mendez, Dr. Katzenstein, Dr. Elliott. I think there's a question about Dr. Kreisman appearing. Dr. Kreisman, without getting into why we need to attend by Zoom, he would come late in the day. If we still have time after calling Dr. Mendez, Dr. Katzenstein. Dr. Elliott, to your question, Your Honor, Dr. Mendez's records are small. They've already been admitted to evidence. Katzenstein and Elliott are both all children's providers. We're only relying on their records that are already in evidence. So it's a short way of saying I think 8:30 should be fine for me.
And those two that you just said, whatever their names are going to be here live?
Yes.
All three of them.
All three will be live. And the fourth one, Dr. Kreisman, he's an all children's provider. So he would be by Zoom, but again, the same records, is just all children's records.
Mr. Whitney, Ms. Holmes, did you get the list down?
Yes. Okay.
So I go back to the question of what time do we need to be here on Monday?
I think 8:30 is fine because we're not looking to introduce any exhibits not on that haven't already been admitted for those witnesses. 8:30.
So we have filed our depositions of the experts that were deposed on the defense side for the court's consideration of our motion. We also still have a motion for a curative instruction that's pending, so maybe we take that up Monday morning.
The motion on your experts, are those any of the people that are coming on Monday?
No, Your Honor,
but if they're filing one against our experts can be coming that week, and so...
Well, my immediate question was what time on Monday, so it sounds like 8:30 is the time we need to be here, 8:30 on Monday, and I do want to have a report back of what that conversation we were just having the last 10 to 15 minutes, and remind me to address this question for instruction, and then we'll go from there.
There was a housekeeping technology matter that I think Clay wanted to address about Zoom. I'll turn the table over to him.
We talked to Mike about it, just with the screen sharing issue. I think Mike could get out.
I stand corrected.
So there's nothing I need to do?
I don't believe so. On Monday morning, that might change, but there's no more I can will.
Everyone have a good weekend. We'll be in recess until Monday morning at 8:30.
Have a good weekend, Your Honor.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.